Well, good morning to all of you. It's great to be with you. We're happy to be here this morning. It seems like it's been a while. I think almost a year ago since we worshiped with you here. So this is a real blessing to be here, and especially with Nolan being here. When he was asked to teach here, I was thankful that this was where God called him, because I knew that he'd be well taken care of here. So God bless you for that, and trust that we can keep building his kingdom together. The title for the message this morning is Living with an Awareness of God's Presence. Living with an Awareness of God's Presence. The crow's nest in a ship was built in the upper part of the main mast, and it was used as a lookout point because it provided the best view of approaching land, other ships, or approaching hazards. Early versions of the crow's nest consisted merely of a barrel or a basket attached to the highest mast. Later on, they became platforms with protective railings, but the early days they were just a barrel lashed to the mast. According to naval legend, the term crow's nest originated from the practice of Viking sailors who carried crows or ravens in a cage at the top of the mast. And these crows or ravens would be released when there was bad visibility, when the mariners couldn't find their way because of fog or storm or such like. Perhaps they got this idea from Noah. I don't know. Noah also released a raven as a GPS agent long before GPS was invented. But the ship would simply follow the crow, and that's how it would find its way to land, because the crow would always fly towards the nearest point of land. So maybe that's where our term today, as the crow flies, comes from. I'm not sure. Now, can you imagine being the barrelman or the sailor that was responsible to climb the main mast to the crow's nest? Some of the early schooners had masts that were 200 feet tall. Imagine spending a shift up in that barrel in heavy, tempestuous seas. Just imagine that, and you being responsible for the surveillance, for the safety of the ship with your telescope or sight glasses or whatever they called them back in that day. Technology has changed significantly in the last 50 years. Surveillance has changed significantly. An estimated 106 million new surveillance cameras are sold. More than 3 million ATMs around the planet stare back at their customers. Tens of thousands of cameras hover over roadways to catch speeding motorists or suspected criminals. Proliferating as well are personal monitoring devices, dash cams, cyclist cameras, cyclist helmet cameras, doorbells equipped with lenses to catch package thieves. These are fast becoming part of daily life. There's even more. The skies are cluttered with drones. Thousands of airborne spying devices employed by countries around the world, among them Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea. We're being watched from the heavens as well. 1,700 satellites monitor our planet, and probably that number is even higher by now. From a distance of about 300 miles, some of them can discern a herd of buffalo or the stages of a forest fire. From outer space, a camera clicks and a detailed image of your property or the block you work on can be acquired by a total stranger. While the need for crow's nest has been replaced with radar and GPS, satellites now twinkle in the night sky, keeping an eye on the world below. However, there's something that has not changed, and that's the eye of our all-seeing God. His eyes never grow dim. They never fall asleep. God never needs to schedule cataract surgery. God's eyes will never miss the enemies or the threats that we encounter in life. Technology will never replace or compete or compare to the surveillance of His eyes. Living with an awareness of God's presence, from childhood we've been taught that God can be everywhere all at once. His presence extends from the depths of where the Titan imploded to the proposed colony on Mars and beyond. God's presence has no limit. Yet there's many people who still try to outrun it. Jonah tried that, and he went for the first submarine ride, didn't he? And the submarine even had an auto-eject feature on it. How about you? How about I? Do we live in such a way that it's obvious that we're aware of God's presence surrounding us? And that's the aim of this message this morning, is to simply re-inspire, to simply recreate, to simply renew awareness of God's presence and how that affects how we live. Because I believe that's the foundation. That is really where it all begins. I see that you have an accountability meeting on Wednesday night. That is great. That is good. Keep that up. I believe our message this morning is a good foundation to help make that kind of thing work. The burden of this message was simply born by an awakening in my own life that I live with a renewed awareness of God's presence. You know, an awareness of God affects all of our lives. It affects our choices. It affects our minds, how we think. It affects our emotions. It affects everything about us. You can now turn your Bibles to Psalm 139. I'm going to ask everybody to stand. Once you've found it, stand to your feet. Psalm 139. So what we're going to do is we're going to read this chapter responsively. So the men are going to start, and the ladies will follow, and we'll just go back and forth like that through the psalm as we read it together. If we mess up, we're simply going to stop and reset and start again, okay? You ready, men? O Lord, Thou hast searched me and known me. Thou compassest my path in my lying down, and art acquainted with all my ways.
For there is not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, Thou knowest it altogether.
Thou hast beset me behind and before, and laid Thine hand upon me.
Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high, I cannot attain unto it.
Whither shall I go from Thy Spirit, or whither shall I flee from Thy presence? If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, if I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, even the night shall be light about me.
Yea, the darkness hideth not from me, but the night shineth as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to me.
For Thou hast possessed my reins, Thou hast covered me in my mother's womb. My substance was not hid from Thee when I was made in secret and curiously wrought in the lowest parts of the earth.
Thine eyes did see my substance, yet being imperfect, and in Thy book all my members were written, which in remembrance were fashioned, when as yet there was none of them.
How precious also are Thy thoughts unto me, O God! How great is the sum of them! Surely Thou wilt slay the wicked, O God, Depart from me, therefore, ye bloody men.
For they speak against thee wickedly, and thine enemies take thy name in vain.
Do not I hate them, O Lord, that hate thee? And am not I grieved with those that rise up against thee?
I hate them with perfect hatred. I count them mine enemies.
Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts.
And see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me into the way everlasting.
Very good. Thank you. You can be seated. Living with an awareness of God's presence, we want to look at four realities of God's presence and four responses that we should have to those realities. Now, we're not going to get done this morning. I expect to get about half done with this message. So we have part one and we have part two. Perhaps we will look at part two at a later date. Living with an awareness of God's presence, reality number one is that we are surrounded with God. The song said it well, awake, asleep, at home, abroad, I am surrounded still with God. Isn't that a wonderful thought? To live with that awareness is a beautiful thing if a person is right with God. That is the most precious thing you can live with, the most precious promise. Now, I'd like to look at some words that describe God surrounding us. In verse 1, we have the word searched. And that word searched, in the Hebrew, it means to examine intimately. A little away the doctor would do if you went to them with a condition and you were concerned that there's something wrong with your health, he would examine you. And it would be a different kind of an exam than what it would be if you went in for your driver's medical. Those driver's medical examinations are just, they're kind of a joke, but it's part of the process. But it means here to examine intimately. And God does that with each one of our lives. And then we have the word known, and the word known means to know. It means to ascertain by seeing, to recognize. Now, we all know what it's like to be in the crowd of people, and maybe it's a crowd of strangers, and suddenly you see a face that you recognize. And that happened to me at the Bible school program last winter. We went down to the Bethel Bible School program. We didn't know very many people there, and as the program was in progression, I looked around and suddenly I saw a few faces that I recognized. Now, there's also something embarrassing that kind of happened. There was a person there that I thought I recognized. I thought I knew who they were, and I smiled at them and there was nobody home. It's like, they probably wondered what kind of Canadian loony flew in. Well, God knows you. He knows you intimately. Like a parent knows their child, like a couple knows each other, God knows us even better than that. He knows what you're thinking. He knows how you're feeling. He knows what your next reaction is going to be. Verse 2, we have the word understandest, and that means to comprehend. It means to grasp. It means to perceive. It means to discern. It means to get to the bottom of. It has the idea of interpreting, unraveling, deciphering, getting the picture. Getting the message. Some researchers say that we have up to 6,000 thoughts per day. There's other researchers that say we have 60,000 thoughts per day, so I expect it somewhere in the middle of that. Well, God understands all those thoughts. He even understands and knows what we're going to think before we even think them. So if you feel this morning that no one understands you, no one gets the picture, no one fathoms how you're thinking or how you're feeling, you can be assured that God does. He certainly does. And God understands us better than we understand ourselves. Verse 3, we have the word compassest, and that word means to winnow. It means to scrutinize. Now, when a farmer winnowed grain in the old days, he would beat the wheat and the straw with a flail. And he'd beat it until the straw, the chaff, the wheat was separated. Then he'd throw that up into the air, and the wheat being heavier would fall to the ground, and the wind would blow the chaff and the straw away, and that's how they separated it. God winnows our ways. He winnows our deeds. He winnows our actions. He knows our motives for why we do what we do and why we say what we say. God knows. God knows the bottom line. He knows if our words are flattery or if they're genuine. He knows if our prayers are to impress or if they're a true expression of our heart. God knows. He knows whether we give to be seen of men or if the motivation is love and kindness. God knows. He's acquainted, verse 3. He says he's acquainted with all our ways. That means God is familiar with. It means that, yeah, he's familiar with, he knows all our ways. Just like a good friend can predict what you're going to say or how you're going to react. My wife can finish sentences for me. I can probably finish sentences for her. We just know what each reaction is going to be because we know each other well enough. We're acquainted with each other. There was a man that everybody knew when I was a boy. There was this man that everybody kind of knew him. And if you'd ask him a question, he would say, probably, maybe, likely, I just don't know. Probably, maybe, likely, I just don't know. Well, I guess he was always right. God is acquainted with all our ways. He knows. We have verse 4, we have the word knowest. And that's the same word as in verse 2. And it means to be aware of, absolutely sure about. There's no misunderstandings with God, no misspelling, no mishearing, no double meanings. Excuses don't work, lies don't deceive him. He knows exactly what we said and exactly what we meant. He always does. A little unlike the emoji language. One of the problems that has arisen with emojis is that the sender and the receiver can take it differently. That's one of the problems that technology has produced, and I'm not sure how it's going to be resolved. There was a case recently where a Canadian judge ruled that the thumbs up emoji is just as valid as a signature, arguing that courts need to adapt to the new reality of how people communicate. And he ordered a farmer to pay $82,000 for an unfulfilled contract. This happened in the province of Saskatchewan. In a recent case, the Court of King's Bench in the province of Saskatchewan heard that a grain buyer with Southwest Terminal sent a mass text message to clients in March of 2021 advertising that the company was looking to buy 86 tons of flax at a price of $17 a bushel. The buyer for Southwest Terminal, his name was Kent Mickleborough. He spoke with farmer Chris Actor on the phone and texted a picture of a contract to deliver flax in November, asking that the farmer please confirm flax contract in the message. Actor, who lives in the community of Swift Current, responded with a thumbs up emoji. But Actor did not deliver the flax in November. And by that time, prices for the crop had increased. Mickleborough, the buyer, and Actor, the farmer, disputed the meaning of the emoji. The buyer pointed to previous contracts confirmed by text message, suggesting the emoji meant Actor was agreeing to the terms of the contract. But Actor said that the emoji indicated only that he had received the contract in the text message. I deny he accepted the thumbs up emoji as a digital signature of the incomplete contract, Actor said in an affidavit. I did not have time to review the flax contract and merely wanted to indicate that I didn't receive his text message. There you have it. Well, the court ruled not in the farmer's favor, but in the grain buyer's favor. Thankfully, there are no misunderstandings with God. Even when we don't have words, the Bible says he understands. The Spirit intercedes for us, even when we don't have words to express our feelings. Aren't you thankful for that? What better friend? What kinder God could you have? There's no other God that can do that. Verse 5, we have the word beset, and that word beset means to bind up, it means to enclose, it means to fortify. We're talking here about how we're surrounded still with God. What a wonderful thought, like a fort with high walls and thick doors, like a cocoon that encloses that butterfly. We are surrounded by God. Soon after God's people left Egypt, they followed a route that took them towards Canaan, but not directly into Canaan. Canaan was a land of promise. It was a land of freedom. And to get there, God took them through a wilderness. And they were traveling along the bottom of a deep canyon that opened onto a beach. onto a beachhead at the shore of the Red Sea. And as they were going through this canyon, the most powerful army in the world was pursuing them. It was coming along behind them, and they couldn't, because the canyon walls were so steep, they couldn't go to the left or the right, and they couldn't go back. The only way they could go was forward. Well, you know what was ahead of them? It was the Red Sea. And the situation looked impossible. But God stepped in. And he took the cloud that was leading his people, and he took it around to the back. Thou hast beset me behind and before. He took that cloud around to the back. And to the Egyptians, it was a wall of darkness. To God's people, it was a wall of light. And it held the most powerful army at bay until God opened a way through the Red Sea. When Elisha and his servant were in the city of Dothan, the Syrian king and his army came and surrounded the city at night. They were planning to capture Elisha because Elisha kept giving intelligence information to the king of Israel. He kept telling him where the king of Syria was going to go next, what his positions were, what he was planning to do. And the Syrian king didn't like that. He surrounded the city of Dothan, and Elisha's servant saw that they were surrounded by the Syrian forces. He cried out, he said, "Alas, master, what shall we do?" Elisha asked God to open the eyes of his servant. And what did he see? He saw that the mountains around them were full of chariots and horses of fire. God's forces. Remember, God is still surrounding his people today. Whether it's in your fight against temptation, whether it's in your struggle to love your brother or your sister as yourself, whether it's the sin that so easily besets you, remember God has beset you behind and before, and you're not alone. What should be our response to this reality? Well, response number one is we should stand in awe. Stand in awe of him. Verse 6 brings this thought out. It says, "Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high, I cannot attain unto it." Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. When you think about how God surrounds you, when you think about how intimately acquainted he is with you, it should produce a response of awe. When David got a glimpse of how well God knew and understood him, it was overwhelming to him. He was awestruck. He was filled with wonder. He was amazed. He was astonished. He was open-mouthed. He was at a loss for words. When you think about how well God understands you, how well he knows you, how acquainted he is with you, what response does it produce in your life? Is it indifference or is it awe? Does it make you want to hide in the bushes like Adam and Eve, or does it make you want to get to know this God better that knows you so well? You know, it's important we never lose our awe, that we never lose our sense of wonder for who God is and what he has done for us. I believe the minute that we lose our awe, the minute we lose our amazement, is the minute we lose our appreciation, and we start to take God for granted, and we start to replace him with other things. God's grace this morning is amazing. We sing Amazing Grace. His faithfulness is amazing. His love is amazing. His word is amazing. His wisdom is amazing. His creation is amazing. And the list goes on and on. Everything that God does is amazing. Psalm 4, verse 4, it says, "Stand in awe and sin not. Commune with your own heart upon your bed and be still, Selah." When's the last time you ever did that? You can't sleep at night? That's a good thing to do. It's a better thing to do than counting sheep. Stand in awe and sin not. Commune with your own heart upon your bed. Think about all the amazing things that God has done in your life. Psalm 33, verse 8 says, "Let all the earth fear the Lord. Let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of him." Psalm 119, verse 161, "Princes have persecuted me without a cause, but my heart standeth in awe of thy word." You offended by what somebody said or did to you, instead of dwelling on the offense, dwell on the precious word of God. Reality number two, Reality number one is we're surrounded by God. Reality number two is we're shepherded by God. We are shepherded by God. Now, you all know the frustration of having no service. You drive through a coulee and the call drops. You're inside a metal building and you can't hear. You hear every other word and it's frustrating. You got to step outside. Bell, Telus, and Rogers all have their limits when it comes to service capabilities and reach. However, with God, the height of heaven, the depth of hell are not beyond his reach. In fact, they're places we cannot reach in our human state, but God can. Elon Musk, you all know who he is, he envisions a colony on Mars. I haven't bought any land on Mars yet. I hope you haven't either, because I think it's a pipe dream. If you want to get there in time for Christmas, if you've got relatives there, you should have left in May. The spacecraft departs Earth. This is Elon Musk's spacecraft. It departs Earth at a speed of 24,600 miles per hour. The trip to Mars will take about 7 months and 300 million miles, and that's if nothing flies apart. If hell is at the center of the Earth, then supposedly it's 1,144.9 miles away. God's presence can penetrate there. Talks here about the wings of the morning in verse 9. And possibly this is a metaphor for light, for the speed of light. Light travels at, I should have asked one of you students that. How fast does light travel? Does anybody know? Did you study that in science yet? How fast does light travel? Anybody know here? If you would have asked me, I wouldn't have known either. I looked it up, so that's okay. Well, it travels at 186,282 miles per second. Does it keep going? How far does light go? Where does it stop? How far does it reach? What is its final destination? I don't know, but God can keep up, no problem. Nothing outruns him. At more than 1,000 miles from civilization in all directions, Point Nemo is unlike any other place in the world. People often vaguely refer to the middle of nowhere. But as it turns out, scientists have actually figured out precisely where the middle of nowhere is, and that is Point Nemo. Point Nemo is the most remote location on Earth. It's so far removed from civilization that the closest humans to that location at any given time are likely to be astronauts. I believe the International Space Station is about 300 miles from us. 300 miles, is it north or south? Or I guess it's straight up. But the International Space Station is probably the closest point of human life to Point Nemo. Point Nemo is located down in the South Pacific. And the closest land is the Easter Island, located 1,000 miles to the north. Point Nemo is the designated area where NASA has programmed the International Space Station and all other space-related debris to fall. Apparently, the International Space Station is, I don't know, it's going to expire by 2030, I believe they said, and they have it programmed to fall down into Point Nemo. Good spot, because there's nobody there except sharks, I guess. I love verse 10. Verse 10 says, even there, shall thy hand lead me and thy right hand shall hold me. It doesn't matter this morning if you're at Point Nemo or at the end of the furthest beam of light. God's hand can hold you and reach you there. What a wonderful shepherd. He wants to lead us. He wants to guide us. He wants us to hold his right hand. And notice verse 13, it talks about how God's hand covers us before we were even born. In my mind's eye, I can see the picture of a little child holding their daddy's hand. That hand is both guiding them. That hand is both giving them security and stability. They let go of that hand and they fall on their face. The same thing happens to us. David understood his deep need for a shepherd and the heart of a shepherd. He wrote some of the most classic words in the Bible. He said, "The Lord is my shepherd." That was the key to his success. Psalm 23 is a beautiful insight into both the heart of the shepherd and our need for a shepherd. Our shepherd provides security and sustenance for his sheep. His love is so amazing that he laid down his life for his sheep. That's our shepherd. I hope that's your shepherd this morning. Is your hand in his today? Or are your hands in your pockets clutching to other things? Other securities. Might be popularity. It might be your personality. It might be good looks. It might be reputation. It might be a sharp IQ. It might be your ability to manage. It can be all kinds of things that we put our security in. Sooner or later, we all learn that the Good Shepherd is the only place we can find true security. I'd like to read an account to you about a brother in the Ukraine. Maybe you read this account, but I was inspired as I read it. It was in one of the newsletters back a number of months ago. But this brother, he was holding the hand of the Good Shepherd. It goes like this. It says, "Thank you for your prayers for Misha Bokov, who was hurt when an anti-tank guided missile hit his car when he was returning after delivering aid to a frontline village. Besides several broken bones, he lost most of his hearing because both of his eardrums were ruptured. They removed pieces of shrapnel that were embedded into his skin. As more pieces of the story are put together, we're reminded again of what a miracle it is that he survived. His vehicle was hit with something strong enough to blow up a tank. Rarely do these volunteers drive alone, but this time Misha was driving his car while Oleg followed in another car. The back of Misha's car was blown to pieces. Thank God there were no passengers with him. A few hours after they were hit, Ukrainian military came upon the scene of the accident. They saw the blown apart, burned vehicle and assumed the occupants had met the same fate as the vehicle. They found a broken cell phone. And when they checked the SIM card in the phone, they saw it belonged to Misha Bokov. Then they found a Bible in the grass. And in that Bible, they found four wedding invitations from various people addressed to Misha Bokov. They called the number on one of the invitations and asked for a contact information for Misha's family. Soon Tima, the head brother for the Christian Center, received a call from the military. They said, 'Do you know Misha Bokov?' They wondered. They asked Tima to call Misha's parents and let them know that their son had been killed. Tima was grateful to tell them Misha had survived. The soldier was surprised and said, 'The only thing that kept him alive was the Bible in his car and a bit of luck.' We know it was not luck at all. It was the merciful hand of God that kept him here. Please pray for Misha's recovery, as well as the other volunteers who are on the front lines.'" What would your response be if you were Misha this morning? What would your response be? What should our response be when we consider the many times that the Good Shepherd has bailed us out, has protected us, has been there for us, even times we were unaware of? Well, David's response in verse 14 says, "I will praise thee. Marvelous are thy works." You know, it's interesting to read customer reviews, and they range from 5 stars to 1 to none. From the best money I've ever spent to I'd never touch one of them again. Here in verse 14, as David meditates on his shepherd's omniscience, his all-knowing knowledge, on his omnipresence, his everywhere real-time presence, he's overwhelmed with gratitude. And look at this review that he gives God. He says, "My soul knoweth right well," he says. I like that. "There's no doubt in my mind. I'm fully convinced." What kind of review would God get from you? If Google would give you the opportunity to give a review on your God, what kind of review would you give him? As you consider how his hand has guided and held you, through the valleys and through the seasons of blessing, the times when you maybe wandered away as far as Point Nemo, or some place where you thought he'd forgotten you. I like the response of 1 Peter 2, verse 9. It says, "But ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, and holy nation, a peculiar people, that ye should show forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light." How do you show forth his praises? Well, number one is you reflect his character. That's how you do it. Can your family, can your friends, can they see the character of the Good Shepherd coming from your life? His unconditional love, even when it's not returned. His patience, even when the results are hard to see. His forgiveness, even when the recipient doesn't deserve it. David reflected the character of his shepherd by the way he trusted him when confronting Goliath. By the way he waited on him for his timing to be king. By the way he honored God's ordained authority even when Saul tried to kill him. By the way he treated Mephibosheth with kindness. He reflected the good shepherd's character. Is your life doing that this morning? The second thing you need to do is recognize God's goodness. Praise must be part of our lives. God's people should be the happiest, most grateful people on earth. Pierre Poilievre says he wants to make Canada the freest nation on earth. I don't know. I'm afraid that's a campaign promise he can't fulfill. But how is it with you? Are you showing forth his praises? Are you among the happiest, most blessed people in the province of Alberta, in the township of Slave Lake? Recognize his goodness. Live with an awareness that God is present, that he's involved and at work in your life and in your world. That brings us to point three. I'm going to look at the clock here, and I see it's time to stop, so we're going to stop there. There's two more points. Reality number three is we're shaped by God. And reality number four is we are subject to God. So you can meditate on those points this week as well. May God bless you, and we'll ask our chorister to lead us in a closing song.